Hello and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors, where each episode we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are looking at Mel Brooks' comedy classic, Young Frankenstein. Returning on the show today to talk about Young Frankenstein is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show. So yeah, I've seen this, I've lost track of how many times I've seen this movie. It's one of my all-time favorite comedies, and it's just such a great example of like what a good spoof film is.
I love this movie. I think I know the whole movie by heart. I think my whole mm-hmm. family knows it by heart. There's several lines in it that are mm-hmm. used extensively all the time.
I think what really makes this film work so well is just how much respect they're showing to the classic Universal horror films, you know, Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, so on and so forth. I know they actually, reading some trivia on it, they actually got the person that created the sets and the props and everything for the lab they used in those movies, Mel Brooks actually bought mm-hmm. those from him and used it in the film, actually gave him credit in this movie, which they actually didn't do in the original film. So you can tell that there's just so much respect he has for those movies. It's not just, these movies are stupid, let's make fun of them. It's like, we love them, but hey, let's give them a little, we need to have a little bit of fun.
Yeah, I think he walks a fine line, but he always does that with all of his movies. Mm-hmm. This is the one where he does the least to like veer into bad taste.
It's definitely like Blazing Saddles is a little bit different, where it's just, you know, where a lot of people, like, even says, like, he couldn't make that film today because people's sensibilities would just be so, like, there'd be protests and everything about that movie. This one, it's not that bad.
You know, the funny thing about Blazing Saddles is he actually asked John Wayne to be in it. Mm-hmm. And John Wayne said, I can't possibly be in it because of my image, but I'll be the first one in line to buy a ticket. Mm-hmm. I think everybody feels that way about Mel Brooks movies. Mm-hmm. Like, even if you wouldn't want to be an actor in it,
you want to go see it. It, you know, even there's even the famous line where he says, "I rise below vulgarity." Yeah,
you know, his ads are hilarious. In my copy of Young Frankenstein, they have him doing like the voiceover trailer, mm-hmm. and in the end, he says, "You know, in glorious black and white." No offense.
Like we were talking about, it feels like even if this was completely taken seriously, I feel like this could be a old school Universal horror film. It captures the atmosphere. I really like the cinematography in black and white. I think it's really good with the use of shadows and light, and even the music, which is can be very hammy at some times.
Yes, over the top.
Hammy. And I even remembered a little bit of the little cue where it goes dun dun dun. That's actually taken from that internet video of the dramatic chipmunk, where it turns around and then it plays that dun dun dun.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think it really captures that feel. So they could like make this a old school movie if they played it completely straight and not funny at all.
Yeah, they could have, and they have a lot of the they got a lot of the way it looks right.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think it would work at all if it was shot in color. The jokes wouldn't quite work. It wouldn't have that feel, or
it wouldn't
parody.
Feel like an old time Frankenstein movie, which I mm-hmm. think is what they were going for.
And I think, you know, we talk a lot about Mel Brooks, but I think another thing that works so well in this film is Gene Wilder. Mm-hmm. And it's just so much perfect comedic timing. One of the parts, just a little thing, but it's hilarious. And he's like, we have to, you know, when the count is knocking on the door, and he's like, we have to be completely cool about this. And when he's saying that, his collar pops off.
Yes. Actually, you know, apparently he had to do each take like 15 times because he kept cracking up. Gene Wilder. In fact, the whole crew had a hard time getting through the scenes because they were, cracking jokes mm-hmm. and making each other laugh. And of course, the script itself is pretty funny. And there's a great story about Gene Wilder and Mel Brooks having a knockdown, drag-out fight about something over on the set, screaming at each other. Hmm. And then Mel Brooks leaves, and then Gene Wilder's phone rings, and it's Mel Brooks saying, "Who was that madman? I could hear him all the way from here. You should never deal with people." And, you know, mm-hmm. that was his way of apologizing.
And you even talk about Mel Brooks, you know, if you watch a lot of his other films, especially Spaceballs, Blazing Saddles, he's in it. He's always in mm-hmm. it. He's playing Governor Lepetta Maine, which is a funny reference to somebody in Blazing Saddles. He was the governor or whatever in Spaceballs, so on. And he was the main character in High Anxiety. In this movie, he's not in it at all. He doesn't even have a little cameo. I think if he was in the film, it would take away from it. I think it's good that he's not in this.
That's why he's not in it, because they wanted it to feel like an old-time mm-hmm. movie, and they thought his presence would ruin it. But that is his voice doing the wolf whistle, the howling wolf off stage. And also, in the last scene, when you see Igor playing the French horn, look to the far left, because there's a gargoyle that's supposed to look like Mel Brooks.
I didn't notice that.
Leave it to Mel Brooks to stick himself mm-hmm. in the movie as a gargoyle.
Yeah, and just even with Gene Wilder, there's such a great cast here. You got him, you got Madeline Kahn, you got Peter Boyle, you got Marty Feldman, you got Cloris Leachman. Those are all just big names in comedy.
Yes, it's an all-star cast, and every person does their job perfectly. Mm-hmm. I think actually Cloris Leachman is a little bit undersung. She's got the thankless job mm-hmm. of being, the woman that the horses neigh at when they hear her name.
Blücher,
yes. And she's very severe looking, but she carries it off with such panache.
Yeah, she kind of always plays that character in Mel Brooks movies. Like, she was kind of like that in High Anxiety. She was also in the History of the World movie, mm-hmm. and I forget what character she's playing, but she's also like that. She always kind of plays that character. She does it so well.
Yeah, and Madeline Kahn always sort of is Madeline Kahn,
Yeah, she's, I think, a very underrated comedic actress. I don't think when people think about comedic actresses, they don't really go to her first, and I think they should, because just every movie, whether it's a Mel Brooks film, or even something like Clue, mm-hmm. or even she had a bit in the last picture, not the last picture show, Paper Moon. She's just always hilarious in mm-hmm. it, and I just love this movie where she's like, she falls in love with the monster because of his Schweinsteiger.
And the way she treats Gene Wilder, too, just so dismissively, oh, not the nails, the hair, the hair.
And then she even blows her a kiss, and she ducks it. And then even just... Yeah, and then Marty Feldman, he's another, I think, a guy that doesn't really get a lot of people go to. I mean, he's worked with everybody. Like, I remember watching old sketches of Monty Python, actors before they did Monty Python. He was right there with them doing a lot of the sketches. And another Mel Brooks film he did was called Silent Movie. And, he's just always, he's funny. He always just has that look. And I noticed that, when they did that joke, like, oh, your hump is on your right mm-hmm. side, so you're left. He was actually doing that. During the filming, he was changing and see if anybody would notice, and they started noticing, so they had to put it in the film.
Yeah, I love those stories about all these extra things that they put in there that weren't really part mm-hmm. of the script, like the uncredited Gene Hackman as the blind man.
Oh, yes.
His line, I was going to make espresso. That wasn't in there either. And everybody broke up laughing when he said it, so they kept it in.
Yeah, and I remember they actually, after he says that, it goes quickly to, wipe to black. Because they couldn't stop laughing, so they had to cut it really quickly before everybody would laugh.
Another ad-libbed line, which is one of my favorite sequences, is Cloris Leachman asking Gene Wilder all these, do you want Ovaltine, some warm milk, perhaps? This was all ad-libbed as well, and I think that's one of the funniest. Ovaltine, nothing. Thank you.
Yes. In another great small role, you used to talk about Gene Hackman, which, you don't really think of Gene Hackman when you think of comedy, but he was great in this. But another one was Kenneth Mars, who played the inspector, and he's probably my favorite character in the movie because he has that mechanical mm-hmm. arm where he's always...
Now, did you feel like that character was sort of reprised in Hugo?
Which character in Hugo?
The
Sacha Baron Cohen character?
Yes, with the mechanical leg. That would get stuck, and he was...
Maybe a little bit, but that character you do feel a little bit sorry for because he lost it during the war and everything, and there's this, woman he's trying to impress and everything. There's more sympathy for this one. This one, you're just completely laughing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then, Jake, what also was just great, you talked about it, just the little moments in the film. It's not all the huge jokes, but it's just, the little parts. Like, I love the part when it's with Kenneth Mars and they're doing the dart contest, and every time Gene Wilder's trying to throw the dart, he yells, so he throws it off target.
Meow!
Yeah. And then it has a perfect payoff because every time he misses, it misses horribly. It's going into the windows, and when the inspector leaves in his car, the guy who was driving his car, the chauffeur's got like the dart in his hat, and it was like all the darts on the tires.
Yes.
It's just perfect.
Yeah, classic gags. I mean, like cartoon worthy, like Tom and Jerry.
And everything just has like a setup and a payoff. One of the things I laughed on early is when he's going on the train and it's in New York, and the couple's like, he was at it again, Marty. And they're just, you know, bickering about something. And then it's like Germany. And then it's like the same couple's like, and they're speaking in German. Marty.
Yeah, and they're having the exact same conversation. Yeah. I use that sequence right there as an example of match cutting, because that's a perfect example. It's also a great way to jump in time, because it gets you from New York all the way to...
Yeah, you know exactly what happened. Of course, you were thinking like, wait a second, he couldn't take the train all the way from America to Germany. He had to take a boat somewhere.
Very, very clever match, though. Yeah. No, one of my favorite little throwaway moments is when they're looking, they finally got behind the bookcase, and they find the book that said, How I Did It.
Yeah, How I Did It. And even the great bookcase gag was like, put the candle back.
Yes, that is a great. And it doesn't even make sense.
No.
Because when they finally open it, it's a big hallway. You're not crushed behind it.
And when she's like, when she looked, there's a hallway. It's like, you didn't notice that when you were down there?
Right, why didn't you just keep walking? Right.
And I think just comparing it to modern comedies today, I'll make a little rant. I don't care for most comedies today. There's a few I like anything Edgar Wright does with like Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, I'll watch. And there's a few others, but for the most part, I usually just avoid them because I don't find them particularly funny. And I think because they don't have the cleverness or the writing like you have with this film, I think it's usually they're trying too hard. It's a lot of it is too much improv, and it's just nobody tells them to stop, and where it's just not funny anymore. Or they try too hard to be funny, where they just keep going with the gag and they keep going with it, just where it just stops being funny anymore. Another part is it's a bit of over-reliance on just kind of dirty jokes about sex or body parts or that kind of stuff. And there's stuff in here. I'm not saying there isn't dirty jokes in there, but it's not the whole...
It's subtle.
It's subtle. Where like other movies, it's just, you know, like had to watch a movie called Movie 43, which is god-awful, and it's just... The jokes are, it's just very blatant and very obvious, and they show everything, and it's just not funny, it's not clever anymore.
Yeah, there's also not a lot of cussing. You know, it's almost a family movie.
Yeah,
almost. I mean, compared to today.
Yeah, compared to today. And it's just, I think it works well with just show how spoof films go well when Mel, you know, he does, you know, we have this, which is a spoof of Universal Horror, High Anxiety, which you talked about, a spoof of Hitchcock. You have Silent Movie, which is kind of spoofing silent movies.
Spaceballs,
a
spoof of Star Wars, Dark Helmet.
Yeah, and then Blazing Saddles, which I almost can't watch like any Western now and not think of Blazing Saddles. He does perfectly. It's such a great genre of movies he's done. He started that whole genre.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody else has sort of taken his place. You know, I think people have tried to make funny movies, like you said, but they're not. They're not clever like he is.
The closest, and I think I would put them up in his league, I would say, are the Zuckers with their early work. So Airplane, Naked Gun, and another film I don't think they did that it gives enough credit is called Top Secret. And those are kind of like Airplane spoofing Airport and all those movies. Naked Gun is kind of spoofing Dragnet and police TV shows. And Top Secret, which is one of the most bizarre like combinations, it's spoofing World War II spy movies with like Elvis Presley rock and roll films. But it does it really well. And they're close. I would put them in the same league. Those two are like the founders of it. But the people they've influenced have been awful, I would say. Like, you know, think of the scary movies, which actually the Zuckers did. But even like date movie, epic movie, disaster movie, those are just unwatchable.
Or even something, what they would do today is to do that spoof that they did of 50 Shades of Grey. And I think it was called 50 Shades of Black.
Oh, yeah. Then the Wayans brothers did
it. Yeah. Had a couple of great jokes. And then the rest of it was just bad jokes and crude jokes and really skating along the line of, wow, that was actually sort of offensive.
Yeah, and I think the main thing why those modern spoof movies don't work is it's just all reliant on references, modern references. Mm-hmm. Like, remember this one YouTube reviewer group I did, they were talking about those movies, and they showed a compilation clip, and it's, you know, oh, here's a joke about Kim Kardashian or Amy Winehouse or this movie that just came out last year. And the thing is, A, those jokes aren't even funny when they come out originally, but they're going to age horribly. Like, 1 year later, those jokes are going to become so dated and irrelevant that this is not going to be funny. More people are going to be like, I don't even get that joke.
Well, like, for example, in the 50 Shades of Black, mm-hmm. one of the jokes was, because the original movie is about a guy who's into BDSM, this guy goes into his playroom and he's got all of these belts lined up and they all have labels on them. And one of them is labeled Joe Jackson, Michael Jackson's dad.
Oh.
So that got the audience actually sort of went, ooh. Like, you get that it's supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
You see why some people would laugh at it. But for the most part, it fell like a thud. But then there were great gags, like looking through the phone and there was like Christian Light Gray, Christian Median Gray.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, solid jokes. There were some good jokes.
And even like in I'll admit I kind of liked the scary movies when I was like 12. But well, there was one joke in one of them where they're trying to run away from this alien invasion. They're spoofing the Spielberg's War of the Worlds film. And he's like, you know, get in the car or you're going to die. And he goes, okay. And then he's trying to open the door. And it's the thing where, you know, when you're pressing the button on your car to unlock it. And then at the same time, somebody pulls open the door lever.
Yes.
And it stays locked. And they kept doing it over and over again. That was hilarious. The rest of it was pretty bad looking back. But that part I still laugh at.
Okay, so one good joke. High Anxiety was great as a spoof movie.
And then once again, it's kind of showing the respect. You can tell he likes Hitchcock movies. And even famously, Hitchcock sent him a bottle of wine or something and he said, have no anxiety about this. He loved it. And that shows, you know, it's spoofing everything. One of my favorite gags in that movie is when the birds are sitting next to him. You're thinking, oh, no, it's going to be the birds. And they just fly up and poop all over him. And I thought that part was hilarious.
I like the shower scene. Yeah. It's so funny because, you know, he's showing all these close-ups, too, of his body. But it's like a man's hairy armpit, mm-hmm. you know, the soap. It looks clumsy and ugly and not at all threatening. And then, of course, instead of having the chocolate sauce mm-hmm. going into the drain, it's the newspaper.
Yeah,
ink.
It's the newspaper guy beats him up because
Which is Barry Levinson, by the way. Yeah.
And once again, it also has Madeline Kahn in it and Cloris Leachman and even Harvey Korman. And it probably, is this your favorite Mel Brooks? Because I might put Blazing Saddles just a little bit above it.
I think this is definitely my favorite. Hmm.
Maybe it's just because I think I've seen Blazing Saddles just a few more times, but I think there's no genre that's it's so cliched a bit that in the Western. I just love how they give it that little send off, and it's, you know, every time I see a Western, I'm thinking of like, oh, that's Blazing Saddles.
I saw Blazing Saddles in high school at a drive-in movie, and that's actually where I think that movie is such a great drive-in movie.
I bet we're a lot of people laughing.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it was, you know, everybody mm-hmm. in high school knew about it and everybody wanted to see it multiple mm-hmm. times.
Yeah. And it's like even in that movie, like Madeline Kahn has ruined Marlena Dietrich for me. Because every time I see a Marlena Dietrich film, I'm going to think of her character as Lily von Stupp.
What a great, and even things like that, he comes up with funny, just funny names.
And if you look into Blazing Saddles, like every character in that name is like based on somebody. Like even I talked about earlier, Mel Brooks' character in that movie, William J. LePetitmane, that was actually a French performer. And he was a flatulist. He could actually fart. He could control his muscles where he could fart at any time. And there's actually, go on Wikipedia and look it up. There's an old gramophone recording of him farting while playing like some famous classical music. I swear, I'm being completely serious.
You know, it's got to be on YouTube.
Yeah. And this is even, I love that joke where it's, you know, everybody's last name in the town, his name is Johnson, and there's Howard Johnson, and of course it looks like the
Howard Johnson. Yeah. Yes. Well, you know, one thing worth mentioning is that that whole Walk This Way thing mm-hmm. was also something made up on the fly. Mm-hmm. And Mel Brooks thought it was kind of corny. He didn't want to leave it in. He thought it was kind of dumb. But they left it in, and the group Aerosmith took a break and went and saw the movie and wrote that song.
Mm-hmm. And he's used that gag like so many times. He's used it in that, and I believe it was also in history of the world, where, you know, they're running away, and one of the women's is a Roman, and she's like, walk this way, and she's like twirling her tunic or her whatever, robe or whatever, and so they start skipping along and twirling it, and then Robin Hood, men in tights, you know, the bad guy's like, walk this way, and he kind of has this pouty mood, and this, so they start walking pouty.
That. Now, I'm not sure if it's Mel Brooks, but I think he might have done Dracula Dead and Loving It.
He did do that.
Okay, because yeah. That's just the name mm-hmm. of that movie sounds like Mel Brooks.
Mm-hmm. Now, so the Mel Brooks films I've seen is Producers, this movie, Blazing Saddles, High Anxiety,
Spaceballs.
Silent Movie, yeah, Spaceballs, and History of the World. Oh, and Robin Hood, Men in Tights. I know he's, like, his later films, you said Dracula Dead and Loving It, and one was called Life Stinks. I heard they weren't that good. Have you seen them?
Yeah, they're not. Dracula Dead and Loving It, the title's actually the best thing. It has, again, a couple of really great moments, and then sort of a missed opportunity. It's definitely not like the Dracula version of Young Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. But I haven't seen a lot of horror movies.
Yeah. And actually, that'll help lead into my next question. I'd like to talk a little bit because I always like try to recommend horror films to you. You're like,
yeah, it's not really my genre.
I'm criticizing you. So what is it about horror films that just, you know, you don't really care for? I mean, I'm not the hugest romantic comedy fan, but there's still a lot of romantic comedies I like, particularly from like the Screwball era. But like, what is it about horror films that just puts you off so much?
I don't like the creepy feeling that it gives you. I don't like being, I don't like the surprise boo moments. I don't like that. Classic old horror movies, like the classic Mummy movies, the Draculas, the Frankenstein movies, they didn't really rely on that. They relied more on, you know, your own sense of dread of this monster and what would happen if they got you. Today's movies are all about the supernatural and doors that won't open for no reason and evil spirits that want to do you in. I mean, it seems like every movie I go to has a preview for some sort of ancient box, locket, what have you, that some teenager gets their hands on and unleashes fury. That's just not my thing.
I do agree, but I think you got to do a little bit of digging if you want to find good horror. I do agree, like, you know, Paranormal Activity number 5000 or Blair Witch number 4 or all those countless number of the ones that you see on TV, the ones that you always will play in the trailers during Halloween time. Yeah, probably don't watch those. I'm not going to defend those. But, like, there was a good movie, really good horror film I saw this year I would strongly recommend. It was called It Comes at Night. It's an A24 film. And it's kind of a zombie movie, but you don't see any zombies. That's what's so scary about it. We maybe get a couple, you know, tastes of what they might be. There's a fear of a door being opened, but we don't know who opened it. And there's this disease or something that infects people, and we see somebody infected with it, but just about when they're about to be burned, so it won't spread. And that's it. Everything else, it's left to your imagination. I thought that was brilliant. That's one I would strongly recommend. That's like an example of good horror. And even another film I watched, it was another A24, it came out last year, it was called The Witch. And that's a movie set in like during the Salem witch trials. But it uses like authentic, it like really tries hard to be authentic. Like they use actual language from like pre-colonial days of America. And it's this sense of dread. We see a couple scary images of this old witch with blood and everything, but it's just like brief flashes. And it's really good. It's, once again, building, like you said, building up that dread. That's the stuff I like, and I think you would like it too. I'm just saying, you got to do a little bit of digging.
Yeah, I like suspense. Mm-hmm. I love Hitchcock. I don't like decomposing bodies. I don't like dead bodies that somehow you're supposed to kill. I don't get it. It's when it comes to the zombie thing. I don't understand how you're supposed to kill something that's dead. I don't know. It's it's my own problem. But what is it that you like about horror movies? What's satisfying?
I guess maybe it sounds a bit sick, but I like being scared a little bit. It's good to be scared every once in a while. And I like building like the atmosphere and just, you know, feeling like you don't know when it's going to come, but it's going to come. It's going to happen. And I do agree where it's, you know, all that crap, the Paranormal Activity, all stuff where it's kind of dumb, and I don't care. But, like, when it's done really well, like It Comes at Night or The Witch or even old classic stuff like The Thing, where even that stuff, it's very gruesome to watch, but it's still amazing because with the stop-motion effects, like, I love that stuff. And even like in, I just recently watched the Donald Sutherland Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
That's
like,
a classic.
That's a classic. Like, that's great horror. And that's the stuff I really like.
I liked Get Out, which was classified as a great horror. But see, I wouldn't call that horror.
You wouldn't?
It's a thriller. But the see, horror to me involves either the supernatural or something, the undead or something like that.
See that. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, horror can also be monsters, but I don't really think of that as horror. Now, horror has to have a supernatural element to it, to me.
That's sort of that's where I'll disagree with you right there, because I think I like the one of my favorite horror movies, even something like The Shining. Oh, you know, that has the parent of the ghosts in it, but it's where people are the ones that are the scariest. I think people can be just as creepy as a demon or a ghost or something, and if they're going crazy or even if they're infected with something and they're trying to kill, I find that terrifying. I think that can, I would qualify Get Out as a horror film.
Oh, it's definitely part of the genre, but for me, that didn't, I didn't dislike it because it didn't have those elements that that I don't like all of a sudden the door won't open, and then there's something that comes up behind you in the mirror when you're brushing your teeth or something. Everybody knows it's coming, and yeah, I don't like that.
Yeah, or one of the annoying cliches in horror films is when like they're in the bathroom and they're, you know, they're brushing their teeth, they're in the mirror, and that they open up the mirror, the cabinet to get something, and they
close it.
In the background, like that's awful.
Or they filled up the tub, and all of a sudden it starts to shimmer. Like,
and there's blood.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We've seen all like, the classic things.
Even like when somebody's like, and then you know, arms in the back. Yeah,
yeah, you know it's coming. Now I like reading Stephen King, but I don't really like most of his movies. Although I think Shawshank Redemption is one of the best movies ever made, but it's not horror. Yeah.
What about, would you think about like something like The Shining?
Well, that's a classic. I mean, you know, it's got Jack Nicholson eating up the scenery and kind of reprising a scene from Broken Blossoms, and it's got a lot of great things in it. But yeah, the twins with the red rum and everything.
You don't
that's the kind of thing that keeps me up at night.
That's
and makes me jump at stuff and think, you know, there may actually be some alligators under the bed. It's like being a kid again.
What about,
not in a good way.
And but what about like something, you know, some of the more campy stuff? A bit like Young Frankenstein, where it's comedic, like even something like the Evil Dead movies, which are very campy, but purposefully campy. Anything like that?
It depends. Like The American Werewolf in London. What a great story, a great and well done. But the decomposed body kind of thing. I still have nightmares about it.
That's what's so great about
it. But the makeup's, it's amazing, but it's so realistic.
I would rather watch that than the CGI stuff where it's some, you know, somebody has red skin and their eyes are black and they're, you know, I would rather watch, you know, the gross effects of that or The Thing, you know. All right, getting close to my question. Is there anything else you want to bring up or talk about?
What's your favorite scene from the movie?
Probably let me think, it's a tough one. I would probably say anything with the inspector in it.
Okay.
Just every scene he's in it, when it's either him, the dart contest with Gene Wilder, or, you know, anytime he's talking and his accent is so thick, even the locals can't understand him.
And he has to repeat himself, yeah.
Or anytime he's just, you know, when they're, or even love when they're trying to break down the door and they're just using his arm as a battering ram.
Yeah, and those great, great sight gags. I like the Abby Normal. Beaker. That's a great moment in humor. Right.
Werewolf.
Werewolf.
Yeah, we could go on and on and on.
I thought you wanted to. No, I don't want to.
All right. Well, then last question I'll have for you is just tell us a little bit about the classes you have.
Well, I don't teach any horror films, of course. one year during when I was doing American cinema, I did show a horror movie. And I can't remember the name of the movie, but I thought it was actually a pretty good one. People have told me since, you know, that's actually a really lame one. But the gist of it was there was a button. Oh, Send Me to Hell.
Drag me to hell. I love that one. Sam Raimi.
See, I thought the ending was very, very clever.
Yeah.
Okay. But there were like three girls who were so afraid, they kept going out, you know, of the room to, you know, huddle in the hall and freak out about how scary it was. So that's the first and last time I've shown a real horror movie. Yeah. But then I showed, I've shown Young Frankenstein in class before.
Well, that's a Sam Raimi film. So that film's supposed to be a little bit goofy and silly on purpose, like his Evil Dead work. But okay. Right, well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking about Mel Brooks and his comedy classic, Young Frankenstein. Don't forget you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. Professor Westhaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, what knockers!